It is surely one of the oldest themes in human history and culture, the great divide, the chasm between the two options, yin or yang, dark or light, positive or negative, good or bad, optimist or pessimist, builder up or breaker down, encourager or critic, war or peace, yes or no, for or against. With no middle ground on which to take refuge, no fence to sit on. Decision time. Choices to be made, in or out. Jesus of Nazareth generated that kind of crisis, those stark choices. There he was, saying things, doing things, asking for commitment. Like Joshua all those centuries before, asking people to choose. Choose this day whom you will serve. So, what to do? Who to be? For him or not? It seemed that not to say yes to him was by default to say no. Anyone who is not for me is really against me. Anyone who does not help me gather is really scattering. Simple, unambiguous. With him or against him. Not to be with him was by implication to be against him. Not to join the gathering was to be complicit in the scattering. No in between. No fence to sit on. He was a truly divisive force. You loved him, or you worried about him enough to want to rid your life of his insistent voice. Where do we fit in? What would our response be? What is our response to him? And within the life of the church, the options remain. Which will we do? Gather? Scatter? What will be our contribution? What would best describe our mindset? What would our role be, our style and emphasis? Gatherer or scatterer? For within the life of churches, there is always plenty to respond to comment upon, to decide about. What form of worship is to be the norm? How does that work for us? What should be the content of worship, and are we finding it to our liking? What is the emphasis of worship? Is it on message? Is it in tune with how we see the faith? Do we find it geared too much for modern ways? Do children find space and get their place in it? How does it cater for the needs of older people? How important and significant is their influence, their needs, their preferences? Do they or should they have some kind of veto or what? There are reactions and responses to other denominations, other styles of church. Are we open and receptive? Or are we locked into historical prejudices and ancient hang-ups? Do we think ecumenically, or is there a streak of intolerance about us? Choices. People come at faith from different places. There are, like it or not, other understandings. Do we dismiss those of a different theological persuasion or ecclesiastical tradition? View with suspicion liberals if we are conservative? Conservatives if we are liberals? When it comes to difficult decisions, are we harshly defensive of our own view and gruffly intolerant of others? Church music traditionally draws much comment. What's the nature of our contribution to that discussion? Are we complainers or embracers? Are we narrow or broad? What tone do we use when we talk about the possibilities? How do we deal with the varied individuals who make up the church family in all their complex differences and with all their convoluted stories? And most importantly of all, what do we make of the purpose and the vision that drives the life of the church? Do we embrace our obligations to mission and to serving, or do we find that all a bit much and say so? Yin and yang, positive and negative, gatherers or scatterers? It's a sure sign of my growing status as a grizzled veteran of ministry that I was invited to be chaplain to a probationers' conference for new probationer ministers, just finished university and looking for their first charge. The theme was, what it was going to be like for them when they got a job and how they would survive the challenges of the first 5 years. Various ministers, themselves in the thick of their first 5 years, were wheeled in to frighten the life out of these fledglings by telling them of the pressures of work, the struggles and the criticisms they would have to deal with when they found themselves in their first charge. The probationer ministers were advised to disabuse themselves of the notion that everyone would be on side with all the new ministers' plans and schemes, and that everyone would be enthusiastic about the so-called improvements the new minister, flushed with energetic optimism, might want to introduce. And they were warned, these trembling new boys and girls, that they should strengthen themselves to face a pretty relentless barrage of criticism during those early years. The probationers blanched to a man and a woman and shuddered at the thought of this grim future, where clearly the consensus of those most recently begun in ministry was that in today's church the scatterers would far outnumber the gatherers. My role as chaplain was to put the shell-shocked probationers back together again before they ran for the hills, and assure them that it would not necessarily be like that. And indeed, within the churches, there were many, many wonderful people of faith, vision, prayer, commitment, generosity, inspirational character and integrity. And they would find strength, encouragement and love to a wonderful and sustaining degree. That had certainly been my experience. But maybe I've just been lucky. The truth is that the life of the church is an arena for robust debate and honest conversation as we seek the ways in which best to serve the Lord and serve the people. And we will all always be asking ourselves, as we hear the sound of our voice and the tone in which we speak, which role do we find ourselves in at this moment? Gatherer? Scatterer? Positive? Negative? Encourager or complainer? Those who know me even a little bit know how much I prefer encouragement to complaint, optimism to pessimism. I should have thought, and those closest to me might have hoped, that I would have become able to deal with criticism and negativity better as time passes. You would think. Sadly, no. Can't cope with criticism, especially when the truth is, as it sometimes can be, it has been deserved criticism. For mistakes do get made. People do get disappointed, or worse, hurt. And I know I've made my share of mistakes and caused too much hurt. So yes, sometimes the truth has to be spoken. In love. Always in love. There's a great Paul Simon song with the line, "But there's no tenderness beneath your honesty." A reminder of much of what I'm talking about here is to do with tone and manner and motivation. We don't pretend there are not issues. We don't deny that there are differences. How we deal with them, the spirit in which we deal with them, is the key. I suppose the interesting question is, how do we get to be scatterers? If our attitude is one of negativity and pessimism and a critical streak runs in us, how did we get like this, and what can be done about it? History is almost certainly to blame in part. The voices we heard giving us a hard time are ingrained in our own thought process, and as a result, criticism is the go-to option for us, the one we know best because we heard it most. There is no doubt that bad experiences, disappointments, failures and mistakes can lean us in the direction of the negative, and we are embittered or limping because of past encounters with other people's actions that leave us bruised and traumatised, jaundiced. And so we risk taking refuge in bringing other people into the pain, cutting them down to size, questioning their dreams, undermining their vision. It can happen. It's noticeable too that when people insist on staying on the outside, looking on from the perimeter, then the likelihood is increased of their negativity coming into play. They have no real stake in what's happening, no skin in the game, and so it's easier to snipe from the safe place of detachment. Sometimes that detachment can give focus and insight, that's true. But really, when you're sweating in the mix with your sleeves rolled up and your commitment is plain to see, there is less chance that distance will lend disenchantment, because there is no distance. There's only up close and personal, shoulder to shoulder solidarity, a shared yoke, a common cause. It's also possible that too great a focus on the small picture can lead to negativity, a way of looking at things that places too much importance on the nuts and bolts and misses the big picture vision. Sweating the small stuff seemed to be a major preoccupation of the Pharisees, who were so concerned with straining the gnats that they missed the camels, so busy nitpicking the minutiae of the do's and don'ts and rules about this and regulations about that, that they missed the Messiah. When the heart is set on the glorious possibilities of the gospel, the need of the world for the good news, the wonderful story that we have to tell, then maybe we don't get so hung up on the little things that are not in truth of the essence. We might not like this or that particular thing, but they are not at the heart of our endeavour. Perspective lends perspective. Perhaps more profitable is exploring how do we get to be gatherers, supporters, creative influences, sons and daughters of encouragement. It is transforming when we see the vision, understand the nature of our calling as the Church of Jesus Christ to witness to his name and lift high the truth of his gospel. When we're captured by that urgency and passion, everything else pales into insignificance. If it doesn't enhance and serve that purpose, then it's not worth bothering our emotions with, not if it's only tangential to that glorious and crucially important summons. When we allow ourselves to be driven by that, inspired by love for Christ and passion for the gospel, then we really can't be fussed with petty things that are far, far from the centre. If we truly seek the mind of Christ, that will be transforming for our attitudes and the way we deal with other people. There's a lovely verse in the Bible that speaks about the tenderness and compassion of God and how a bruised reed he will not break. This is how he deals with the frailties and complexities of people who make mistakes and get things wrong, people like me and possibly people like you, not with a brutal harshness, but sensitively and supportively, the tenderness of God. And we have a better chance of becoming like that, one of those wonderful people who says the encouraging word, reaches out the supporting hand, listens respectfully and generously to the other person, becoming grace-filled people. If we spend time with him, reflect on his teaching and nature, seek his spirit in our living, our dealings with others. People are fragile. People are struggling. People are vulnerable inside the church as well as outside. And that means there are so many who need us to be people of the gathering persuasion. Gentle, supportive, upbuilding, consistent, loyal. Choices. His way, our way, for or against. And apparently no fence. The fence has been removed. And so the hymn writer asks, who is on the Lord's side? Who is on the Lord's side? Amen.